You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Knowledge of geography and modern history are not strong points of our educational system. Here's a short experiment. Sketch a map of North Africa and draw the approximate shapes of the countries. And below this, trace and locate the countries of West Africa. Have you included Mali? Write its name, and then mark with a dot the place and name of Mali's modern capital. And for a bonus point, write the name of the historic city of Timbuktu. Is it north or south of the capital? After this interview with Roger Annis, find an atlas and check how well you know the geography of West and North Africa. Roger's joined me in the studio. He's been following events in Mali for some years, in part because he sees several parallels with his own longtime anti-imperialist work around Haiti. Good morning, Roger, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning. Thanks. It's good to be with you.
Mali popped into the news of the international media in January. If you want to give us a context for the current conflicts in the West Africa region, where Mali is located, where would you start? What things would you start with?
Well, I'd start with the whole continent. Of course, an event like France's military intervention into Mali doesn't come out of the blue or fall from the sky. There's obviously some very important underlying social and economic forces going on here. And indeed, when you look at the history of Africa in the past 10 and 20 years in particular, it's really a history of a whole project of the reconquest, the recolonization of Africa that's been taking place. A grab for natural resources, which as a consequence strips countries of their political sovereignty. And really a center point of this has been in the Congo, which has often been described of late as Africa's world war, all the events there over the past 20 and 30 years. So a recolonization of Africa and a great big grab for resources, and parallel with that is a militarization of the continent, and this focuses in on West Africa as well. And it's really quite a tragic circumstance because Africa is still a very desperately poor place in many respects, dealing with major public health issues. And yet we've seen over the past 10 years in particular, including in West Africa, a tremendous pouring of military resources and funds in by the big Western imperialist powers.
If we were to now narrow this down specifically to Mali itself, we've had the, of course, the January attack on Mali by the French military. But where would recent events better begin with if we're going to understand them?
Probably in the year 2005. That's when the United States took the lead in creating what it called the, and continues to call the, Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. And this is an alliance of the militaries of the 11 countries, including Mali, the others that surround it in West Africa, part of the political and military response to the challenge to U.S. world domination as it perceived it from September 2001. And so since 2005, there's been a terrific militarization of the region. Again, this is really underlying this, is this overall grab for resources, but in particular the United States and its ally France, and increasingly now its ally Canada, perceive that there is a threat to their economic interests and to the political stability that they would like to see in the region. And so Mali has been drawn into this vortex. Its military has become a partner to this so-called counterterrorism partnership. And in fact, the country of Mali itself was the host to the annual military exercises that go along with this partnership that are called Operation Flintlock in the years 2007 and 2008. And that exercise, annual exercise, was supposed to take place again last year in Mali, but it was postponed due to the coup d'etat of March 21st of last year.
Well, we often just hear about the jihadists and al-Qaeda, but Mali is a country of many ethnic minorities, and what sort of dynamic pre-exists this whole involvement of al-Qaeda of the Sahara?
Yeah, there's two things in Mali. I mean, there's certainly been a long-standing struggle by the Malian people for social justice, and remarkable moments in Malian history that have marked that, including in 1991 when there was essentially a popular uprising that got rid of a very authoritarian government in Mali at the time and opened the door to some social progress. So there is a strong environment, movement of trade unions, political parties, and so forth in Mali. But the current conflict, the French intervention, is really provoked by the national rights struggles that have been a part of Mali's history. Mali's borders were created by the colonial powers. They don't correspond to the national and language groups that are in that part of the world. And so there is a number of minority nationalities, the most well-known of which has become the Tuareg in the north of Mali. And these populations overlay the national borders that were drawn by independence. And so in the case of the Tuareg, there are people of about 1.5 million who live in northern Mali, but also in the surrounding countries, most notably in Niger. And they've been fighting for almost 100 years for political autonomy, sometimes for independence, sometimes for forms of political autonomy. And that struggle on their part for language, economic, social rights has really been frustrated by the, first of all, by the colonial powers, but then by the succeeding governments in Mali who govern in the south of the country. And really, the governments of Mali represent the majority population of the south of the country, but not so much the people of the north. And so this national rights struggle of the Tuareg and other nationalities in the north of Mali, which very much sort of stretches over into the border of Niger, where it's also a very hugely important political question, led to the defeat of the Mali army last year in the north of the country. And it was following that defeat that Mali's military overthrew the Malian government, really an attempt to shift the blame for the economic elite in Mali. Was a political disaster that they had lost this war that they had been provoking in the north of Mali against the Tuareg. So this is the political instability and background into which France decided to intervene, to really set this straight, to reassert its control and domination over the whole country and over the whole region, very much in partnership with the United States.
So this predates the whole involvement of this small grouping of jihadists who become really the focal point and pretext for foreign intervention.
Yes, the forces that defeated the Mali army last year in the final victory of the Tuareg forces was in February of last year. They are largely a secular force. I mean, the Tuareg are a Muslim people, but the MNLA, National Liberation Movement, which led that stage of the struggle against the Malian army, were not any kind of religious or fundamentalist grouping or front, shall we say, political front. But what happened after the defeat of the Malian army was really a quite stunning and massive entry into the north of Mali by heavily armed, heavily financed Islamic fundamentalist forces, who essentially pushed aside the MNLA and took control of the north of the country. There's the story of who they are, where they came from, who promoted their entry into Mali has really yet to be fully told, and there will be some books written on this, which you look forward to. But exactly the role of Algeria, its government and political police in this, the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, and others in the Gulf states, the conflict that's been going on in Nigeria, a very important country in the north of Africa. There's a real confluence of political and economic interests that have driven this intervention by the Islamic fundamentalists, and they rule with an iron hand. And understandably, the people of Mali and even the people like the Tuareg in their majority were opposed this development. But in the specific context of last year, the movements of the time lacked really the weaponry to be able to stand up to the fundamentalists. And this was then the pretext that France used for its intervention, that you had fundamentalist forces taking control of the north of the country, which is on the surface true, but much deeper and underlying things taking place that were motivating France's interests.
Let's look at one of them. I gather uranium is an important resource. How important is that to France?
Extremely important, and 80% of France's electricity is generated by nuclear power stations. And lo and behold, most or all of the uranium that France acquires for its nuclear centrals comes from the neighboring country of Niger, where, if anything, the Tuareg and other national rights struggles have been even stronger than in Mali. And so very much the intervention by France into Mali has been motivated by France's concern to keep an iron grip on the country of Mali, of Niger, which, like Mali, are among the poorest countries of the world. And the Nigerian people certainly get very little benefit of these uranium mines, but they're very substantial. Niger is one of the large uranium-producing countries of the world. The French multinational Areva, multi-billion-dollar multinational, is building presently the second largest uranium mine in Niger. This is a country which, in the language of the French imperialists, has been destabilized by the Tuareg and other national rights struggles. So certainly all the developments in the north of Mali that were occurring going back some years now have been of concern to France. France opposes the national rights struggles that have occurred there. So this was very much a big factor in France's decision to make almost an overnight decision to intervene. And I say overnight in the public realm. In fact, France had been planning this really since the election of François Hollande to the presidency last May.
Let's turn to Canada now and the Canadian government. Where has our government's involvement in Mali been? When did it begin, so to speak, in any significant way?
Probably in a big way in 2009. That's the year when Canada decided to substantially increase its aid to Mali. And as many of us would know, aid is often an accompaniment to imperialist investment and penetration. So Canada is very much part of the grab for resources in Africa, this recolonization process that I talked about. There was a remarkable column published in the Globe and Mail 2 weeks ago by one of the paper's columnists, Doug Saunders, which was very, very blunt in its description of what he perceives as going on in West Africa. He said this looks like the colonialism of 100 and 200 years ago, and Canada is very much a part of this. In the south of Mali, there are substantial gold reserves, and there's 5, 6, 7 operating gold mines, several of which are owned by Canadian firms. Canadian mining interests have a major, major interest in all of Africa, and including in West Africa. So this has been a very motivating force. And Canada began its participation in this militarization process formally in 2009. That was the first year that it joined this Operation Flintlock exercise that I mentioned earlier. And so Canada's very much been in partnership with France and the U.S. And, of course, this is symbolized by Canada's decision to both to lend its aircraft support to France's intervention, which was renewed again for 1 month 2 days ago by Minister of Defense Peter McKay. And also Canada has special forces on the ground, both in the capital city Bamako of Mali, and are involved in an ongoing training program of the military in Niger. And the Nigerian army has intervened into the north of Mali alongside the French army. So Canada's involved in this, both the government as well as Canadian mining companies and aid organizations, many of which have bought into this whole process really quite deeply.
At the same time that the Canadian military is extending its time of involvement publicly and so forth, and the history you outline, there seem to be occasional statements, whether by Baird or others in the conservative government, that seem to echo criticisms of the military adventure. Can you piece those two things together? What is going on there?
I think the government's dealing with a very difficult public relations exercise, because this Malian army, which overthrew the elected government of Mali in in March of last year, and then again overthrew an interim government that had replaced the overthrown government. That was in November of 2012. So twice this Malian army that's been trained for years by the U.S., Canada, and others has overthrown governments. So this is an enormous embarrassment. And following the first coup d'etat on March 21st of 2012, led, by the way, by Amador, an officer trained by the United States, Amadou Sanago, it's been a difficult public relations exercise. So Canada was very critical in word of the coup that took place in March of 2012, again following the second coup. Canada has said it will not get involved in the sort of ground war that France is engaged in now in the north of Mali. Difficult exactly to know why. They certainly supported France all along, and they are providing military assistance. Not willing to join the ground war? Well, is that a case of having been burned politically in Afghanistan and therefore being very wary of Mali? Are they maybe convinced that France has embarked on a bit of an adventure? I don't really think so. Where this whole thing is headed towards is for the United Nations Security Council to rubber stamp a permanent occupation force in Mali that will take control of the country in the way that the MINUSTAH Security Council mission has done in Haiti. That's part of my interest in the whole thing, is seeing the parallels with Haiti. So, you know, where exactly Canada lands on its feet as far as the, you know, the governing regime that will come into place, I think there's no doubt that they will be solidly, remain solidly on the side of France and the United States and all this, even if they seem to be feeling some embarrassment, some pressure, whatever that's causing them to make these occasional statements suggesting that there's things are not quite right in Mali.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you in the studio and to give a bit of the backstory to the contemporary events, because I think for most of us they appear a bit confusing, and the simplification that the media present is things people are skeptical of but don't have the information that you've just been providing to develop alternate understandings. So thanks a lot, Roger.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
My guest has been Roger Annas. He's coordinator of the Canada-Haiti Action Network and also of its Vancouver affiliate, Haiti Solidarity BC. If you're interested in many stimulating resources that he's gathered on Mali, I suggest that you go to his blog. It's Roger Annas, A Socialist in Canada. That's the blog you want to check, and particularly have a look at some of his recent posts. There's a column on the left-hand screen where you can click on those.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.